away from us, Diana. Thank you again, Matt. Thank you.
Check her website, greencountyfordiana.com.
Nice to meet
She's
you.
She's going
to
go on a Stewart's tour. Right. Thank you, Karen.
This is Peter Holzapple, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Funkhauser and Amy Huffnagel of Rhinebeck, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Anna Grunewald at Politico reports that while the state Senate voted for a law mandating sexual harassment training for all New York workers, the Senate hasn't conducted the training for legislators and staff since March of last year. The law was signed on April 12, 2018, with an October 9, 2019 deadline for all New York workers to receive training. Democrats took control of the chamber this January and have not yet held the required training. Quote, "It turns out the Senate Democrats were so busy patting themselves on the back for passage of their radical leftist agenda that they neglected to offer anti-sexual harassment training to all Senate employees as required by law," unquote, says Scott Reif, a spokesperson for the Senate Republicans. Quote, "After the horrors we've witnessed both inside and outside the legislature in recent years, this should have been a top priority. It clearly wasn't," unquote. Democratic Majority Spokesperson Mike Murphy claims the conference will be in compliance if they hold the training by the end of the calendar year. Quote, "I think Senate Republicans should take some time and do some self-evaluation and apologize for the years and years of delay in addressing this crisis by blocking all meaningful reforms," unquote, Murphy said, again avoiding the October 9th deadline, which has now passed. Read more about this story at Politico.
Sarah Tapton of Columbia Green Media reports that visitors to Greene County in 2018 spent more than $185 million, an increase of 8.4% over the previous year, according to a report by Tourism Economics. The firm is commissioned every year by New York State to study the impact of tourism. The Catskills region in general experienced an 11.3% increase in travel spending last year, the most significant growth of any region in the state, according to the report. Greene County Tourism Director Heather Bagshaw said in a statement, and I quote, "We're very fortunate in our amenities, attractions, and lodging partners. We welcome travelers from around the world. We love sharing Greene County's treasures," end quote. The report found the Greene County labor income was up nearly 14% in 2018, and employment generated by tourism was just under 23% countywide, making Greene County the region most dependent on tourism income in the Catskills. You can read that full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports at the Other Hudson Valley that EPL Environmental Advocates last week released their environmental scorecard for New York State senators and assembly members, with Dede Barrett getting a perfect score and George Amador and Daphne Jordan scoring low. The advocacy and lobbying groups based their scores on the legislators' voting records. Barrett is a Democrat who represents parts of Columbia and Dutchess counties, and Amador and Jordan are Republicans from either side of the Hudson River. Both Amador and Jordan got the lowest scores in the entire Senate, and EPL environmental advocates also gave Amador an oil slick award for his, quote, consistently poor environmental record, unquote, and, quote, abandonment of environmental principles, unquote, according to the report. Read more about this story at the Other Hudson Valley.
Debbie Mayer is reporting for the Columbia paper. Tickets go on sale this weekend for the 20th anniversary of Film Columbia, beginning Friday, October 18th. The festival will present roughly 70 films from 15 nations, including two that were featured at the first Film Columbia. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon will be screened as part of a salute to James Chalmers, who wrote and produced the film and made it part of the fledgling festival. And Dinner Rush is now digitally restored. Larry Kardish, who with Peter Biskin programs Film Columbia, said, and I quote, "I'm delighted to bring them back on the screen," end quote. Calopi Nichols has been managing director of Film Columbia since it began. Film Columbia grew out of a Columbia County Council of Arts annual festival that celebrated filmmakers in the region. Carter said, and I quote, "When that stopped, Carol Roseman had founded the Chatham Film Club, and with Carol, we used that membership list as a base to start Film Columbia. Now we're a minor festival," end quote. The festival schedule is available at filmcolumbia.org. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Rick Carlin reports in the Times Union that the General Electric Company will begin next week dismantling its Fort Edward plant, monitoring for PCBs, volatile organic compounds, and small airborne particulates in the air at property boundaries. PCBs were used in capacitor production at the GE plant and one in Hudson Falls, and the toxic chemicals were dumped into the Hudson River for many years. GE closed the electrical capacitor factory at Fort Edward in 2016 and recently finished a six-year project spending more than $1 billion to dredge the river in an effort to remove the PCBs. Environmental groups and state officials want the company to do more dredging. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Development Corporation has decided to move forward with the purchase of less than 1 acre of land on Front Street from the CSX Corporation. The parcel would provide primary access to the site of the former Katz Warehouse property located on Montgomery Street in the city's first ward, which is slated for redevelopment. The HCC board approved the purchase in May, but with several conditions, including an assurance the property could be subdivided. However, the Hudson Planning Board will not vote on the proposed subdivision until October 18th. At a special meeting held October 8th, the HCC board voted unanimously to take the risk and hope for the Planning Board's approval of the subdivision instead of pulling out of the sale. The cost of the CSX property is $175,000 and will be financed by a $200,000 loan from the Columbia Economic Development Corporation. The details of the sale are expected to be discussed Monday, October 14th. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
The Altamont Enterprise reports that Albany County Executive Dan McCoy's proposed $733 million budget for 2020 is $21 million bigger than last year without a tax raise. McCoy's proposal, released October 9th, has a slight tax decrease from $3.56 per $1,000 of assessed value to $3.51 per $1,000. McCoy says nine mandates from the state and federal government make up 80% of a county's budget: Medicaid, public assistance, child welfare, special education and pre-kindergarten, indigent defense, probation, early intervention, retirement, and youth detention. Quote, "We are encouraged by another budget with a zero tax rate increase, but we look forward to a full and complete review of the executive's proposal," unquote, Republican Frank Morelio, the county's legislature's minority leader, said in a press release. Quote, "Our priorities continue to be the same as last year, a budget that spends only what it needs to spend to provide quality services to the people of Albany County," unquote. Read more about the story in the Altamont Enterprise.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Monday with a high near 66 and a low around 38. Tuesday should also be sunny with a high of 57 and a low around 39. Then Wednesday it should rain and could be heavy at times with a high near 58 and a low around 41 with the rain tapering off overnight. You're listening to Radio WGXC Acre at Catskill Hudson Radio for open ears. There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the add an event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Monday, October 14th, members of the community are invited to participate in the Hudson Area Library Tween Advisory Council's original escape room escapade, Altered Zone New York. Come and play as a ragtag team of friends or with your family. The game is limited to 15 minutes, and the team that has the shortest time will win a special prize. Registration is mandatory. Please RSVP by going to hudsonarealibrary.org/escape or call 518-828-1792. On Tuesday, October 15th, Literacy Connections of the Hudson Valley is looking for people who love reading, who want to share the gift of literacy in the English language with an adult learner in Columbia or Greene County. No previous teaching experience is necessary. Our next orientation session will be October 15th. Sign up for the tutor training by calling 518-828-1792, extension 104. On Wednesday, October 16th, Safe Space is a peer-led and confidential group for LGBTQIA adults where anything can be discussed free of judgment at the Hudson Underground on Warren Street, first and third Wednesdays of every month, 6 to 7 p.m. For more information, contact Rachel Sider at 518-567-1723 or rseider@mhacg.org. The Catskill Town Board committee meetings usually are held on the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. The public is encouraged to attend, and there will be a live web stream on WGXC.org. On Thursday, October 17th, WGXC's Fall Pledge Drive will run October 17th through October 31st, 2019. During this drive, we will continue to build our base of monthly sustaining donors to WGXC. Growing a community of sustaining supporters is vital to the station's longevity. To make a recurring donation or to make a one-time gift, visit WGXC.org/donate or call 518-697-7400 and pledge your support of creative community radio for open ears. When Timmy Cleary returns from World War II, he finds himself in the middle of another war at home. Trapped in a troubled marriage, each of his parents want him as an ally in their ongoing battle against one another. Bridge Street Theater in Catskill presents Frank D. Gilroy's The Subject Was Roses, a drama of family conflict and love, at 7:30 p.m. Blank Hellscape and Claire Rousset perform at Tubby's in Kingston at 8 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, Democrat from Rhinebeck, representing the 19th Congressional District, Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam, the 20th Congressional District. 538.com website reports that, so far, first-term Congressperson Delgado votes with Donald Trump's positions 4.3% of the time. Since Democrats took over the House of Representatives, Tonko also votes with Trump's positions 2.1% of the time. In the previous congressional session, Tonko voted with Trump 22.6% of the time.
Bill Munson is reporting for the Times Union. Congressional representatives from upstate have joined the chorus of Republicans and Democrats criticizing the decision of President Donald Trump to pull U.S. troops out of northeastern Syria in advance of an expected attack by Turkey and the anticipated impact on Kurdish allies. Republican U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik of Schuylerville recently returned from a trip to Turkey and the Syrian-Jordanian border. Stefanik, in a joint statement issued along with four Democratic members of the House Armed Services Committee, called Trump's move, and I quote, "a misguided and catastrophic blow to our national security interests," end quote. Democrat U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado of Rhinebeck said American troops' removal was, and I quote, "deeply alarming," end quote. He told reporters, and I quote, "making this move without warning, at least without appearance of any coordination with our other allies in the region, is reckless and dangerous," end quote. Senate Minority Leader Charles E. Schumer called the Kurds a key U.S. friend and ally. He said, and I quote, "to abandon them would make no sense at all when there's strong bipartisan opposition to that abandonment from Democrats and Republicans, and we're going to push the Trump administration to reverse its decision," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik said October 10th that she is not in favor of impeachment. She said, and I quote, "it is illegal to ask any foreign nation for help electorally. I don't think that's what the president did in this case," end quote. On a telephone call in July, President Donald Trump released a summary of the discussion where, after the Ukraine president asked to buy weapons to fight the Russians, he says, and I quote, "I would like you to do us a favor, though," end quote, and then asked for an investigation of a political rival. Then a few days after Trump revealed that conversation, he then publicly asked China to investigate his political rival. Stefanik said, and I quote, "I think when it comes to the China statement, that was certainly not an appropriate statement to make, but I don't think that was actually asking a foreign nation to support his campaign. It was not that," end quote. But a Trump advisor, Michael Pillsbury, told the Financial Times that he got, and I quote, "quite a bit of background on Hunter Biden from the Chinese," end quote, after Trump made that public statement. Pillsbury changed his story after the report was published. The three other Hudson Valley representatives, Democrat Paul Tonko, Antonio Delgado, and Sean Maloney, all have backed the impeachment inquiry. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Amelia Munson reports in the Times Union that Democrat Antonio Delgado has raised more than $2 million this year for a reelection campaign in New York's 19th Congressional District. Delgado from Rhinebeck has $1.5 million cash on hand after launching television commercials in response to the Republican National Committee recently airing a TV commercial attacking his support for an inquiry into removing the president. Three Republicans have announced campaigns to unseat Delgado: Anthony German, a retired National Guard general, Ola Hautua, a fashion designer and stylist, and Michael Roth, who runs a charity nonprofit. They have until October 15th to report their most recent fundraising totals. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union. Paul Tonko does not list any public events this week on his website. He never does. Antonio Delgado lists public appearances on his website, but only if his staff organizes the events. He has none listed this week. This has been the WGXC Congressional Report. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
Here's a 2011 release from local guitarist Alexander Turnquist. This song is called Spherical Aberrations, and it's from Hallway of Mirrors.
Thank you. Amy Rigby's setting up here in the studio, getting a guitar tuned and ready to go. All right, well, you've got a guitar. You want to play one of the songs off the new record?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Which one are you going to play?
I was going to play something mellow, but maybe I should play something more, you know, to kind of like get moving a little. I think I will. I was talking about like people that have helped and inspired me, and so I wrote this song for one of, you know, one of the producers that I got to work with, and who just, you know, just like it's, I don't know if anyone, like, if you'll keep going, if there isn't.
But being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us into fighting one another. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves, and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us.
Get it? Take a look into the sky and see it's scraping the buildings. Or look into the mirror, see the face of resilience. My heart and frustration is in it. When I spit it, it's vintage. Soul molded into my own image. Yeah.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
It ain't hard.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
Yeah, it ain't hard.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
Yeah,
it ain't
hard.
WGXC 90.7 FM Acra.
And now here is the feature programming coming up on WGXC on Tuesday. At 2 p.m., the monthly show Noise and the Megacity, hosted by Paulus Van Horn. A dive into an archive of collected noises from 10 megacities across the globe. Interviews and ruminations will be mixed with these sounds in search for a better understanding of a fundamental question. What is noise? This month, a transmission from the road focused on the quiet noise in Seoul, South Korea. And don't forget the morning show at 9, the afternoon show at 4, and All Together Now at 6. To keep up with local news, interviews with community leaders and personalities, and a rundown on public meetings and local and regional events with weather updates. To view the full schedule, make a one-time donation, or become a sustaining donor, visit our website, wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible, in part, by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdemar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October 14th, 2019. I'm Dan Hyman. The Syrian military is moving in as the U.S. moves out, and an unknown number of ISIS supporters have escaped detention. As the Turkish offensive in northern Syria gathers steam, it's creating a power vacuum in the complex conflict. This weekend, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said American forces would withdraw as safely and quickly as possible. Meanwhile, the Syrian Kurds announced a deal where the Assad government would aid their fight against Turkey. A Fort Worth African-American woman was playing a video game with her nephew at home just before being shot to death by police, according to the family lawyer. Police say they were responding to a neighbor's call about two doors ajar at the home where Atitania Jefferson lived with her mother. Body cam footage reportedly shows the officer shooting Jefferson from outside the building. Colorado insurance officials are looking at a public option for health coverage there. Eric Galatis has more about how publicly owned insurance plans might compete in the for-profit marketplace.
The proposal would require insurers with a certain market share to provide public option plans across the state. Adela Flores Brennan with the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative says the plan will help control costs.
When we talk to consumers out in different areas of the state where they maybe only have the option of one particular company selling health coverage, they wonder what they're missing and they wonder if they could get a better deal with something else.
The plan would also set rates for payments to hospitals and other providers based on what Medicare pays for similar services. Hospital advocates have warned that set payment rates could lead health providers to limit patient services.
Meanwhile, a Shark Tank-style competition near Washington, D.C. hopes to bring better health care to underserved communities. Diane Bernard reports that the contest, sponsored by the Heart Association, will feature 9 companies.
One competitor is Andrew Suggs, who started a Baltimore company called Live Chair. It makes and supports an app that aims to improve the health of African American men by training their trusted barbers to check clients for common ailments.
Initially, Live Chair is targeting hypertension, but in the future, we plan to tackle other chronic diseases like diabetes, CVD, or COPD. Our mission is to transform the barbershop into the hub of health for Black men.
Other businesses in competition include a company that makes a wearable device to help people manage their diabetes. Another is a grocery store located within a subsidized housing complex, the first in the nation. Anyone can attend online at empoweredtoserve.org and vote for their fan favorite.
This is PNS. In impeachment news, President Donald Trump says he might sue 2 of the Democrats leading the inquiry in the House. Trump says his advisors have told him Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Intelligence Chair Adam Schiff have legal immunity for the actions taken in Congress, but the president said he might sue them anyway. In the past, Trump has threatened multiple times to sue his critics, but often not followed through. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's son says he will resign from his position on the board of a Chinese company. Trump has called for China to investigate the Bidens. Hunter Biden says he won't serve on the board of any foreign-owned companies if his father wins the presidency. And the Washington Post has confirmed the details of a story reported by Bloomberg. In 2017, they say the president of Turkey pressured Trump to intervene in a criminal case to aid a Turkish-Iranian gold trader. The man, a client of the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, was accused of helping a Turkish bank launder more than $10 billion worth of gold and cash and move it to Iran in defiance of U.S. sanctions. According to Bloomberg, Trump in turn pressured then-Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, but Tillerson refused to act on the case. Today is Columbus Day, but across the country there are efforts to turn the attention to the people here before Columbus. 4 Montana cities celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. Holly Oldcrow is a Montana State University student organizing the Indigenous Peoples Day celebration in Bozeman.
Kind of a reminder and recognition that Natives are not something of history or in the past that no longer exists anymore. They're still here today, and that culture and identity and history is as alive as it was then.
8 states and more than 100 cities have made the change. In western North Carolina, an effort is underway to preserve and build on an important Cherokee site.
After preserving a sacred Cherokee site in Franklin, known as the Niquassi Mound, members of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians and a local conservation group are now developing a 60-mile cultural corridor. Juanita Wilson is co-chair of the Niquassi Initiative.
The Cherokees honored it, considered it to be their spiritual center,
Niquassi means the star place.
The Niquassi Mound is the only remnant of a Cherokee settlement that thrived more than 500 years ago. Once completed, the Cherokee Cultural Corridor will follow the Little Tennessee River and include historical information on Cherokee settlements, trade relationships, and traditional knowledge of plants and agriculture. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
I'm Dan Hyman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Joanne E. McFadden is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. The town of Ravenna is preparing to welcome the Rail to River Brewing Company next spring. Partners Anthony Mitchell, Steve Douglas, and David Newman are prepared to open the brewery at 109 Main Street in Ravenna. Town residents Mitchell and Douglas were home brewers for years before deciding to go pro. The brewery will be open Wednesday through Sunday evenings until 10 p.m. and offer 5 to 6 beers on tap, as well as hard cider from another maker. Douglas said, and I quote, "We'll definitely have things for non-drinkers. Children of all ages will be welcome to come in with their parents. We'll have board games for the kids to play," end quote. The tap room will serve only light bar snacks, but customers will also be invited to bring their own. Douglas said, and I quote, "People can bring whatever they like," end quote. He says Ravenna is a good location for a brewery, filling an important spot on the map between the Real McCoy Beer Company in Del Mar, Honey Hollow Brewing Company in Earlton, and Crossroads Brewing Company in Athens and Catskill. Douglas said, and I quote, "We felt that the timing is right to have this type of business open up in town because we'll be able to serve a lot of people working in the port area and possibly Lafarge and CSX," end quote. Read the full story in the Ravenna News Herald. The Poughkeepsie Journal is reporting Dutchess County officials are looking to expand the domestic violence prevention funding in its proposed 2020 budget. County Executive Mark Molinaro announced his proposed spending plan would increase funding for domestic violence and sexual assault prevention programs and services by 10% over 2019, allocating a total of nearly $3.7 million. Part of that increase comes from the recommendation of the county legislature's Sexual Assault Task Force, according to a statement released by Molinaro's office. Molinaro allocated $100,000 for specialized sexual assault training for law enforcement, among other things. Molinaro said in the release, and I quote, "There is clearly a greater need for education and awareness about domestic violence and sexual assault more than ever before," end quote. The increase comes in the wake of several high-profile instances of domestic violence or suspected abuse. The Dutchess County's 2020 spending plan will be presented to the full legislature on October 30th. Read the full story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo announced last week the state is making available $1.5 million for eligible school districts to grow and develop New York's farm-to-school programs. The programs help K-12 schools to increase the amount of locally grown and produced food for school meals. Cuomo said in a written statement, and I quote, "We know that serving our children healthy local meals, they are better, more productive students, and that they are more likely to continue eating healthier foods as they get older. Programs like Farm to School and our No Student Goes Hungry initiative are making a difference in not only providing nutritious food choices to our students, but also helping to support our farmers. I look forward to seeing this momentum continue in even more districts across the state," end quote. Applications available for round 5 of the program include K-12 public schools, charter schools, and other entities participating in the National School Lunch and Breakfast Programs or the Summer Food Service Program. Grant funding of up to $100,000 per project will be awarded. Rachel Silverstein is reporting for the Times Union. The State Senate this week kicks off a series of roundtable discussions at locations statewide concerning potential changes in how New York schools' funding formula should be updated. Known as Foundation Act, the formula determines how millions of state dollars are distributed across New York's 950 school districts every year. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said in a statement, and I quote, "We need to have real discussions on how our public schools are funded and if this is the most effective way to ensure New York students receive the education they deserve," end quote. The forums will focus on how foundation aid meets student, district, and community needs with the goal of achieving greater equity in school financing. The first roundtable will take place on October 16th in Westchester County, with subsequent forums scheduled for Buffalo, Syracuse, Long Island, and New York City. There is no plan for a forum to be held in the Capital Region. A public hearing will be held in Manhattan on December 3rd. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now here is your WGXC Hands-On Radio weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a mostly sunny Columbus Day afternoon with a temperature high near 68 degrees and a southwest wind at 5 to 11 miles an hour. Tonight it will be mostly clear with a low of around 40 degrees and a north wind at 5 to 13 miles an hour. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, sunny with a high near 61 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low of around 40 degrees. And on Wednesday, rain mainly after 2 p.m. with a temperature high near 62 degrees. And Wednesday night, more rain with a temperature low of around 45 degrees. So there you have your weather update, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
If you can't make your local town meetings but want to attend, WGXC can help. Currently, local volunteers make recordings and live web streams of the Catskill Town Meetings, the Hudson Common Council Meetings, and the Columbia County Board of Supervisor Meetings. If you miss the live web streams, volunteers post recordings of these meetings as soon as possible at WGXC.org on the newsroom page and in the audio archives. If you're going to local meetings and you have a phone in your pocket, you can help too. Email info@WGXC.org and WGXC will help you share recordings of local meetings and events. You can also use the free WGXC app, available in the App Store, to do your own live webcast from local events. Contact info@WGXC.org for more information about how you can help share valuable local information about your community with your friends and neighbors. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tammy Dillon of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Aaron Pednati, and I am at a multimedia art exhibition in Troy at Collar Works called Feel Me, and I am interviewing Becca Van Kay about her exhibition. which is a multisensory exhibition that involves quilted visual patterns and recorded music. Basically, you walk up and you look at the picture and you listen to the music on headphones, and that involves some sort of device like a phone or an...
I'm just using an iPod for this exhibition. Each piece, there are three pieces that have music associated with them with two iPods. Like, the two that are on the same wall have one iPod. And yeah, then you can just pick it up and stand directly in front of the piece and just be absorbed into the experience of, like, the symbiosis between the visual patterns and the repetitious dance music.
Okay, so you sort of already addressed my first question. The experience that I had was I walked up, I put on the headphones, and I looked at the art on the walls. And the art is typically made of multicolored yarn. And it was this interesting experience in which I'm looking around at all of the patterns that you've woven into the visual fabric that I'm looking at, and I'm listening to music at the same time. And despite the fact that the pattern is static and frozen on the canvas, there is a quality of rhythm. There's a quality of music. And I feel the rhythms of the music expressing themselves through the visual art that I'm perceiving. So that is clearly not a coincidence, right? That's a part of your artistic process. So can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, totally. So that, like what you're explaining, is exactly my intention. That's what I hope to translate with my pieces. So when I'm making the works, I'm always listening to house and techno mixes. And what I do is just get into this trance, essentially, where it's like a meditative rhythm. And I want the pieces to essentially pulsate. And each piece has one song associated with it that I think, like, what you're seeing is representing the rhythms that I'm experiencing with my body. Because I think music is so ephemeral. We have so little language to actually describe how it makes us feel, and it's also so personal. And so this is just my experience of these songs. And so I'm glad that that's coming across in some way.
So how would you account for this process whereby something musical gets translated into something visual? Because if you're sitting there weaving as you listen, there's not a totally conscious, this is how I'm going to represent that musically thing going on there. There's some sort of unconscious translation of the musical rhythms. What do you think is going on there?
Well, I'm totally blanking on the term for it, but there are people who see music as colors. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Synesthesia.
Yeah, synesthesia. And I don't think I have synesthesia exactly, but I do. Maybe I, like, have it on some level, because what I see is what I'm hearing, essentially. And that I don't really have any more language to describe the reasons I make color decisions. All I know is that I have a really strong sense of color, and I have a very loud sense of color in the way that I make color combination choices is very deliberate, but subconscious at the same time. I don't know how to describe. Yeah, it's just like half the time I'll peel off a layer of yarn because that's not looking the way I want it to look, but I don't have any other language to describe why it looks right or doesn't look right. But in the end, I just want to have these vibrations, visual vibrations.
But something in the nature of what you're hearing is translating into something in the nature of what I'm seeing. Yes. That is definitely coming through. And that was a big part of the phenomenology of the experience for me. Like, I felt the rhythms of the music in the visual art. And that was, there's something really remarkable about that. And there was also this thing where, you know, different songs that you were playing had different rhythms to them, and the songs were correlated to the particular work of art that I was looking at, and I could feel the rhythms of those particular songs in that particular work of art. So I think that what you're producing, we don't really have a word for exactly what's going on there, but there's something pretty profound at an ontological level in your art. Your thoughts on that?
I mean, that's, I think, one of the greatest compliments I've ever received. Because, yeah, I feel like that's present in pretty much every aspect of my practice. Like, even with the other works on the wall, which are tactile fabric collages, essentially. I think as it relates specifically to the works that you are most interested in, I'm also just translating the kind of motion that I get in, the action of actually creating the works, which is in itself repetitious. Like, I'm just doing the same thing over and over again. And so I think in some way that comes across in the visual representation in this weird way. I mean, I guess a lot of handwork, which is partially what this is, it's like an immediate visual representation of a repetitious act. And that, I think, goes really hand in hand with house and techno because of that persistent bass beat that is just always there. Even if you're making other types of creative decisions, there are constants. And so I think it lends itself really well to that. I don't know if I answered your question properly.
You did, but I also would opine that I don't think that what's going on is simply a translation of an underlying rhythm into a visual form.
Oh, no.
Because there's difference along with the repetition.
Yeah.
There are multiple patterns that emerge. So it's like in your own way, you're creatively riffing on that underlying beat. You're doing something of your own with it, and the way that that manifests at the level of the visual art translates. It comes through, but also changes. Like, it's not just a direct translation. There's some kind of adaptation that's going on as well.
Definitely. Well, I think what just came to mind is what else I like to do with the music is obviously go out and dance. So I'll go to a rave and I'll be out from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And what goes with every different song is you kind of do a different dance to every song. So I feel like that's sort of another version. I'm kind of doing a dance with the song.
Mm-hmm. Or even when you're listening to the same song, you change up your moves.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's like totally mood dependent, energy dependent. And so you'll probably get a different result each time. Yeah. It's also quite interesting because I'm a very detail oriented, schedule oriented person in every aspect of my life, with the exception of my artwork. It's the place where I am most off the cuff and spontaneous. And I think that lends itself to this type of practice, that to be in touch with my emotions and my headspace.
Well, that cognitive and affective translation definitely comes through. Thanks very much for this interview, and best of luck with the rest of the exhibition, which is going on till when?
I think it's October 12th. But I think it is mid-October. But yeah, it's going to be up for a month and some change, and we have more events coming up.
So I totally recommend that people listening to this come out and see it, because it is a compelling and very interesting experience. And free. Great.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show.
My pleasure.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Welcome to Troy, and thank you for coming here. This is Manufacturing Day.
It is, and to come by and see such an operation like this, where MMC is doing such fine work with great precision, I'm impressed by the workmanship here. I'm impressed by the passion to really deliver a perfect product. And, you know, it showcases the importance of trade skills in our society. They're these trades that we need for us to function and to move forward. And
absolutely.
So there's great futures here for people who are gifted with their hands and who have specific passion to make things work in a way that's very functional for our society. So it's a great operation.
You've had a busy week or so.
I have.
I want to congratulate you on the Limousine Safe Act.
Oh, thank you. It's that incident hit my hometown so hard. My hometown is Amsterdam, and just about 17 of those individuals of the 18 in the limousine had some order of connection to Amsterdam, and it's essential to move forward, having learned from that tragedy. I do not want their deaths to be in vain. I've told the families we honor them, we respect their loved ones, and we cherish their memory, and this is a good way to do it so that no family ever has to go through something like that again. This was a death trap on the road that should have never been on the road, and we want to make certain we tighten the regulations so that it's all about safety and protection of those who choose to do what they were believing was the safest outcome to celebrate a 30th birthday, and look, they became victims. It's angering.
And your vote regarding the impeachment says...
You know, I think with the president's acknowledgement of what he did, the law needs to be enforced. I raised my hand in oath to the Constitution. We need to uphold that oath. You go forward when you see illegal or unconstitutional behavior, and when it's acknowledged by the person who committed it, you have no choice but to invoke the law. And that's where I stood on moving forward on articles of impeachment.
You have a lot to do with climate and the environment, and
right.
You just proposed 13 bills, am I correct?
Yes, we have a number of bills that we put in a package because we have highlighted the year 2050 for 100% net zero greenhouse gas emission. So we want to make certain that we're robust in our activity to do whatever it takes to build efficiency into the process, to embrace innovation, to have workforce development. Decarbonizing all sectors of our economy is important, from agriculture to manufacturing to industrial to buildings to certainly the efforts that we can make in the utility